Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
I haven't talked to Jane Wareham in, I'd have to look that up, probably at least a year, if not longer. She's out of Surrey, England, and the last time we talked about her book, Emotional Intelligence. Now, the last time we talked, she had to call me. She was nice enough to do this. She's just a blessed soul. And although in her previous lifetime, she may not have been, but she's a blessed soul. And every 7 minutes, because it was a free call from across the pond, you know, the phone would cut out. Now, I don't even know if they offer that service anymore, but she's now on Skype calling me today. Jane, how you doing?
I'm really well. Thanks very much, TJ. How are you?
I am fabulous. And you're living in Surrey, England. Where is that located again?
It's south of London. So it's between London and the coast.
Okay. So you're about how far away, would you say?
About 25 miles from the center of London.
No kidding. Now, Surrey must be is that a fairly small town, or?
No, Surrey is a county. We split the country into counties.
Mm-hmm.
And Surrey is one of the counties around Greater London.
Oh,
if you
I
think
see.
Of it as a clock face, if London is a clock face, we're just around sort of 7 o'clock.
Okay. So.
One city, I think, in Surrey, and the rest are towns and villages. It's very green, very leafy, rather lovely.
Great. That sounds like an awesome place. How long have you been there?
Oh, I have lived in Surrey for 30 years.
Hmm. And you were born where?
I'm Welsh. I was born in Cardiff.
Hmm, okay. And I know when we talked the last time, I know we talked about a lot of the difficulties you've gone through in this lifetime, and even maybe connected some of that to previous times. But you had pretty much of a roller coaster ride in this lifetime, didn't you?
Yes, yes. It started, it was a bit of a quiet start, I suppose. And I went off to university, and I met my then husband, and we had a son. And really over the last, 10 years, things started to go pretty bad, and I ended up, getting divorced and losing everything material in my life. And I was also extremely ill. I nearly died a couple of times.
You nearly died twice. Wow.
Yeah. And I have slowly but surely been brought back to the path I should have gone along when I was, when I was a girl.
How do you know it's the right path?
I feel it's the right path, and I've also been told by psychics it's the right path.
Okay.
I'm here to learn certain lessons, and I'm here to help.
And so you're saying that, now I'm guessing this doesn't happen to everybody, but if we stray off our path a little bit, we could get some wake-up calls?
Yes, yes. It's a bit of a poke in the ribs by the universe. The poke in the ribs could be anything from something minor to something very major.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, a life-threatening illness or, in my case, as I say, the loss of everything from that previous life, but the previous life in this lifetime.
Hmm.
So, in other words, my life completely changed.
Completely changed.
Hmm.
And you know, I know people, Jane, it seems like, and granted, I don't know everything about them, but there are some people that just plod along, do the same thing. They might not be wonderful people, and nothing ever seems to happen to them. And they'll live their whole life and they'll die. And somebody once told me, and this is kind of how I feel about it, when you start seeking it, it will start seeking you. And that's when you'll start to go through. And also, if you have a plan in this time around where you want to gain a lot more. Maybe sometimes we come here, we just don't want to do a lot. I'm just going to be lazy.
Mm.
And so maybe we don't get these big wake-up calls. And I think go ahead, Jane, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was going to say maybe we're not due to have the wake-up call in this life. Maybe the one before was so turbulent that we're here to learn how to just be. Or maybe because we've got free will, that's the whole point. And as you say, if we don't go seeking it, it doesn't come seeking us.
Mm-hmm.
But it just means that all we're doing is deferring it. So when we come back next time, we'll probably have double the dose.
Yeah, great. I'm so looking forward to the next time. But the thing is, it doesn't have to be a bumpy ride, does it?
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. And it's like anything else. I mean, I talk about in my emotional intelligence book, you know, something's only a problem if you look at it as a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things that are very challenging in life. But if you look at them as challenges rather than problems,
right,
they probably won't seem as bad.
Right. And it's something you can learn from.
Oh, absolutely. It treat everything as a learning experience.
So when we can step away and remove the emotional part of it and look at it, we can see a different picture.
Yeah. I mean, you can't ever take emotion out of any situation completely. But if you can put it to one side and understand it, it makes life much easier. You know, there are people out there who say, oh, I can't do this, I've lost all of that, you know, and instead of doing something about their situation, they become resentful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those are the sort of people that probably will have to come back and work through those issues in the next life.
And also, you're making a choice by saying that, aren't you? You've basically just predicted your future.
Yeah, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, it's very easy to give up, and it's very easy to look at problems as problems. But in the end, it won't get you anywhere.
You told me now, and we'll get to more because you have a new book coming out. And I'd like to talk about the reincarnation thing a little bit. But I think when we talked the last time, you were telling me that you learned at an early age. How old were you when you first heard about reincarnation?
Not so much reincarnation itself. I think I've always believed in reincarnation. It's just one of those things that I read about when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I never questioned it because I just thought, oh, yeah, that makes sense. My father was a medium, so I grew up with dead people, if you like. So I never questioned that there was an afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
Either. I mean, from a very early age, from being 4 or 5. But the concept of knowing what my previous life was actually was only manifested when I was in my 30s.
When were you told? I could have swore you told me that somebody told you some things early on in your life or at some point in your life about who you were in a previous time?
In my 20s, before I had my son, I was told by a couple of psychics that my husband and I came as a package, my ex-husband and I came as a package, and that we had been together in many lives before, not always as man and woman. I mean, sometimes I've been the man, he'd been the woman. Sometimes we've been two women. I know I've been a man before.
Hmm.
But nobody had actually said to me until I met this woman when I was in my 30s, and she actually gave me specifics about her life. So it was when I was in my 20s, really, that the concept of soul groups, I suppose,
continue to come back. Now, in your book, Emotional Intelligence, you talk about a journey to the center of ourself. What is that all about? How can you explain that?
Well, most people think they know themselves, but they don't. And most people actually don't want to think about themselves. They don't want to head into that maelstrom of emotion that's inside them. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't question themselves. They don't think about what makes them tick. So when they suddenly flip out about something, they don't analyze that and think back to why that may have, that may be something that happened to them when they were a child, and those situations have replicated themselves in this particular situation, and suddenly they go nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't think about themselves. So what I try and do in the book is to get people to analyze who they are, what their strengths are, what their perceived weaknesses are, what makes them tick, and find out more about themselves.
So, now I think when we did the interview, your book even wasn't out at the time. And how's it doing now? Are you getting a lot of people buying the book? Or?
Yes, it's doing really, really well, particularly with you wonderful people in America. I have to say that I've sold a lot more books in America than I have in the UK.
You're going to have to do a state tour over here sometime, you know.
Well, I really do want to do that. I really
come visit the UP of Michigan, you know, come up here.
Yeah, no, I mean, if I come to the States, I'll definitely come and see you. but realistically, it's not going to be this year.
No.
I've got too many other things on and too many commitments here, but. Yeah, it's gone down really well in America. And I actually get, I suppose you call it fan mail, I don't know, from all over the world. I've got people in Brazil and Italy and Australia. And it's gone really, really well. I'm very happy.
Isn't that something how now, because of the internet, I think has a lot to do with it, and with our cell phones and everything that have the access to all those things, we have become like one world, haven't we?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I know I'll get emails and stuff on my podcast, or I can go back and track, see who was listening to my show a little bit. I don't know who the people are, but I can see what country. And I get people from all over the world, and I'm thinking, wow.
Mm.
And it just brings us all together and connects us as one.
It's fantastic. And it just means that there are like-minded souls all over the world.
Do you think there are more coming out? Waking up, so to speak?
I think people are waking up, actually. But I also think that they were probably always there, but we couldn't get to them. And they couldn't get to us. I mean, you know, even my parents' generation, if they could see me now sitting here talking at this little tiny laptop. I mean, I'm sitting here talking to a laptop, and I'm talking to somebody, you know, in America.
Right.
It's quite incredible.
Well, it's really neat that we can do this, because I was wondering, I don't want to run up the phone bill here at the radio station where I do the interview. They probably would let me go. I was thinking, how can we get around this? And then you said, well, I'll just do it through Skype. And I don't have actually any connections on Skype. You were telling me you talked to your son in Australia?
Yeah.
Through Skype? You're able to, the visual part of it too, the video?
Well, I would do if I had a webcam, but I wouldn't
dare
people.
So just so.
Isn't it funny, talking about technology? I mean, he's been gone, he's just traveling. He's been gone just over a year now, and I've been absolutely fine, and we message each other on Skype mainly, and we talk on Skype, but the only time I've lost it is when I saw him. And that actually made me cry, the fact that I could see him. Whereas talking to him is a different thing. It's strange, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just
a very emotional bunch.
I thought the Brits weren't. I thought you Brits weren't emotional.
Ah, well, you see, you have to remember I'm Welsh. I'm not English.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I think the English have a stiff upper lip.
Yes, they do. They really need your book more than anybody, don't they?
Well, yes. Yes, they do. And I mean, it has sold quite well over here, but I think you guys over there are rather more in tune with your emotions than
The women are, I think, the men are of the younger generations, I think, but the guys who who work, who live out in the country like I do, and my dad, he never had any emotion. A man was not supposed to show those kind of things. So if he was still around, I'd say, hey, Dad, you want to read Jane's book? And he'd probably look at it and grunt. That's what he'd probably do.
But, of course, the thing is, you know, you've hit the nail on the head there. You said he didn't have any emotions, but, of course, he did.
He did. He absolutely did.
That's what causes the problems. We all have emotions. We all...
And you feel we need to let these things out, right?
Of course, yeah.
And if we don't let them out, can we get really sick from that?
Oh, absolutely. And I do believe that, it's called dis-ease or disease. But dis-ease, it's when people are not at ease with themselves. That it's now been proven that quite often cancer can be triggered by traumatic events and stress.
Yeah, there was something that I read, it was probably a year or two back about people. There seems to be some research to support, and I'm sure there's many different things. But if you lose your job, many people, 6 months after they lose a job, develop cancer. Now, the odds of that happening, and actually it happened to a friend of mine back in 2005. We're going to take a break. Jane Wareham is from Surrey, England, which is not too far outside of London. And we're going to continue talking. If you want to find out more about Jane, she has a website, janewareham.com. And we'll talk some more in just a moment.
Sirens, jet engines, car horns, leaf blowers. Today's world puts our sense of hearing on overload. Luckily, there are places we can go to refocus our senses. Our national wildlife refuges. It's amazing how much more you'll hear when you just take a minute to listen. Like a stirring chorus of songbirds warbling in the treetops. Or the industrious beaver slapping its tail in the mountain pond over baritone bullfrogs. Or the pulsating beat of a pileated woodpecker looking for a meal. When you hear these things, you're hearing the world the way we found it. With over 500 refuges across America, you don't have to go far to make a special connection with nature. Learn more at fws.gov/refuges. That's fws.gov/refuges.
Hi, this is Dr. Cass Ingram, and you're listening to Out There with T.J. Ryan.
It's Out There, Out There, Out There.
Her name is Jane Wareham, and she's from Surrey, England, and she's written a book called Emotional Intelligence. I don't remember how I came across it, but somehow I did. It looked interesting, and then I found her website, and she was my guest before, and now she's working on another book, which may come out towards the end of the year. What is the name of that one?
Well, the working title at the moment is Surviving Separation. It's all about separation, so divorce, separating from someone after a long-term relationship.
That is a very traumatic event, I'm guessing, for a lot of people.
Yes, it's one. It's in the top three.
How do you deal? I mean, it's got to take a long time for some people to release that.
Well, some people never do. In the book, I talk to all sorts of people. I've done lots and lots of interviews. And obviously, I've got friends who have been through it. I mean, we all have. Some people never acknowledge, as we were talking earlier about people like your father who never acknowledge their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people who are so terrified of rejection, and rejection is at the root of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
They're so terrified of rejection that they just go straight to the next person, which is why the divorce rate, particularly in America, actually, when I was doing my research, I was quite surprised it's even higher than here. The divorce rate for second and third marriages is sky high because, effectively, very often people will come out of a first marriage, think, I can't be on my own, I can't be a reject, and they go straight into marriage number two, and then when that doesn't work, they go straight into marriage number three.
How many times have you been married, Jane?
Once.
Okay. I've been married twice, but I didn't jump. The woman I'm married to now, I dated her for like 15 years.
Oh, well, okay. You took your time then. Well, this is the thing, you know. So many people are just so terrified of being on their own.
Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't be, should we?
Well, of course not. No, I mean, and this is why it was a natural progression to do this book after the emotional intelligence book, because we just feel that we can't move on because we rely on the other person to validate who we are. We never get to know ourselves.
And that's the whole thing. We don't.
Exactly. So hopefully, if people read book number one and then learn how to find themselves and to get to know themselves, they won't need book number two.
So we talk about, you know, past lives and coming back again. And I asked this probably the last time, but why do we keep doing these kind of things? Why do we come back again and again and again? Is that part of a choice to be here, or what's...
Oh, yes, yes. We definitely choose to come back, and we definitely choose who we're going to come back with. And, well, my personal belief is that we have groups of souls that we come back with.
But why do we do all this to begin with?
To learn what life is all about as an earthbound soul.
Because we're not physical beings like this.
No.
So we want to experience this and say, you know what, I wonder what it's like to be married to Jane Wareham. I wonder what that would be like. Yeah, I'm going to get hitched to her for a while.
Yeah. It's more to do with learning lessons in life. And
are the lessons always leading us towards love?
Yes. Yes. I mean, love is the ultimate.
So even when we have bad things, really bad things, those are some of the greatest teachers, aren't they?
Well, they are, because, and what's interesting, I mentioned to you off air, this is a wonderful book, and I recommend it to anyone. It's by a British author called Sue Minns, and it's called Soulmates, and I can't quite remember the subtitle, but it's something like Understanding the Meaning of Intense Encounters. And what she effectively says is that every intense encounter that you have, which might be something you perceive as love or hate, is a learning experience for you. So it might be, for example, that somebody really, really drives you mad. You would almost call them an enemy. But they're here to give you probably your most valuable lessons.
Absolutely. I think that is so true. As much as I hate to run into it, and I'm not just talking about relationships, men and women relationships or love relationships, people you work with.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
It could be all different types of folks. You know what? I'm pulling up.
It could be anyone, because as I said to you before, for example, I know I've been a man in a past life. And in the past life that my next book is going to be about, not the divorce one, but the one after that, my now ex-husband was my female best friend. So it certainly doesn't have to be, you know, in a sort of love relationship.
How does he feel about that? Have you told him that?
Oh, yeah.
Is he open to that?
He used to be. We unfortunately we don't really communicate much these days. But
so
yeah,
you're still not in a good position with this fella.
He doesn't want to have anything to do with me. So there's nothing I can do about that.
That's well. So be it. Right? Does that still bother you, Jane, at all, in any way?
No. I find it slightly sad, but. But that's it, really.
Well, once you guys get out of your physical bodies, you'll go, what was I thinking? I love you. Come here.
Exactly. And, it's just a shame that... I mean, I'm sure it'll come around to it.
Do you ever have, like, any out-of-body experiences? Do you ever get those?
Only between sleeping and waking. But, yes... And I have very, very vivid dreams, and very real vivid dreams. In other words, they're not sort of outlandish situations.
Right.
So I'm never sure whether that is actually an out-of-body experience or a dream.
Do you have connection like with your spirits? Because I remember you said they kind of guided you in some of the things you're doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I talk to my spirit guide regularly.
Do you ever see them, or do you ever sense them around you? Or
I sense them, and I have a picture in my head, which feels right.
And do you know how many are around you, or what their names are, or anything like that?
Yeah, yeah, I know. I know the one that the one that I talk to is called Yuri.
Yuri.
Mm.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
A Russian monk.
A Russian monk. No kidding. Mm. Wow. Well, we were going to talk about, and I'm just asking these questions because I'm curious, and I think it's so cool that you share all that stuff. Some people might be a little leery to do that, and you're very open about all of it.
Mm. Well, it's my experience, and if somebody disagrees with it, then fine.
That's okay, right? At this point, as we get older, hopefully we kind of realize I really don't care what others think or what they say. I mean, it's not that I don't care. It's just that I'm not going to worry about it.
No, exactly. I am who I am, and it's up to other people to cope with that or not.
Now, we're talking about, you wanted to go a little bit down the road of reincarnation. What did you want to mention about that?
Well, just that it's a very thorny subject, because if one accepts the reality of reincarnation, then it means that there is no death. There is no such thing as death. Well, obviously, this physical body dies, but the soul has no ending.
No.
And that is a big, big thing for a lot of people to accept. It's shared by many religions in the world.
Do you think it was taught? Do you think it was taught at one time, and maybe it's been kind of forgotten or covered up?
Well, certainly it used to be taught in Christianity, and then it was, covered up.
See, I've heard that before. Did that goes back like to one of the emperors of Rome changed that?
I'm not sure when exactly it was, but I know that it used to be something that was openly discussed and believed in, and then suddenly, belief in it was considered heretical.
It's too bad because, I think you can learn so much. I mean, I don't know if you need to dwell on it or find out too much about your previous time, but maybe sometimes you do, because maybe you're carrying some of that baggage over. You and I kind of talked about that concept, and I think you can carry some of that baggage over, because I talked to a woman out of Detroit who actually does that, and she'll go and look in the Akashic records and check out somebody's previous time. You know what the Akashic records are, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And she will relay that. Now, if you have something to tell, she'll tell you. But if there's nothing that you're carrying over, she won't go into detail about a previous time.
Mm.
So that's how I found out about, that I was in the Civil War over here in the States. And then also, I think I lived as a Native American and who knows what else. Maybe you and I fought together as Romans at one time.
Hmm. Well, maybe. It's interesting that, it is interesting that...
You know, I am connected to that as well. Now, you believe you were a Roman soldier back when, wasn't?
Oh, I've no idea when exactly it was. It wasn't a lifetime that was particularly important for me, and your lady from Detroit will probably bear me out on this. There are lifetimes, and like you mentioned off air, there are people who seem to just sort of go through life and nothing much happens, and they live and they die.
Mm-hmm.
We all have multiple lives, but some of them just aren't very remarkable.
Pretty boring. Sometimes they're pretty boring.
And we don't have anything to bring from that particular life into this life. So what tends to happen, certainly with regression or with people who work with reincarnation. Another good guy who's an American guy, Dr. Brian Weiss. I don't know if you've ever spoken to him, but he's written some really interesting books. He's a psychiatrist, and he discovered reincarnation, if you like, through talking to some of his patients. And a lot of their problems have been caused by problems in previous
lives. Right, that sounds very familiar. There was a fellow out of Toronto who wrote a book called Life Between Life.
Yes.
And he was a doctor. Now, I don't think that's the same one you're talking about, but he discovered the same thing.
It might be, actually.
And that's a book I read years and years ago. And what was cool about it is that one guy, for example, had this pain in his knee, and doctors couldn't figure out what it was. And when he brought the man back, the man, under hypnosis, remembered he got it shot off in a war, in the Civil War, or some kind of war.
Yeah.
And when he remembered that, the pain went away.
Yeah.
So we can carry those things over.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I was always convinced, for example, that my mother had either been beheaded or hanged because she couldn't bear anything around her neck. She couldn't wear necklaces. She couldn't wear polo neck sweaters. She just couldn't bear anything around her neck.
Do you ever go and get, have you ever gotten like a regression of your previous life?
Well, as I say, this psychic I went to see, I went to see her because I was having some business problems, and she suddenly started channeling my spirit guide. And it was like being, and he started speaking to me as the person I had been when he was alive, and that's when we knew each other. And that was in Kiev in 1051.
No kidding. Wow.
He was calling me Sophia, and I thought, what are you talking about? Sophia. And he just told the whole story. And everything was very clear. I made copious notes because, you know, I was a very sort of sharp-minded businesswoman at the time, made all these notes. Then, and it was before the age of the internet, so I went to the library because I knew nothing. I mean, I knew nothing about Kiev in 1051. I couldn't have told you anything about it at all. And I went to the library and I did the research, and all of these people that he talked about and all of the and things that were quite odd about the place. I mean, there's a place in Kiev, and I still haven't been, and I really must go. But there's a place under Kiev. It's built on a series of labyrinths, which is called, and I'm sure I'll get the pronunciation wrong, but Pechersk Lavra. And it was where the king at the time, who was called Yaroslav the Wise, his father had been converted to Christianity, and he was, so Yaroslav the Wise was purportedly a Christian, but he was still very interested in all the old traditions, you know, astrology and lots of esoteric spiritual things. So he had a lot of monks down in these labyrinths studying esoteric writings from all over the world. And they were like a closed society. There were only 12 of them. And, my spirit guide was one of the monks.
No kidding. It's amazing. So how did you feel about that? That felt really true to you, didn't it?
I burst into tears. When I read all of this, it was, again, another light bulb moment. And
so when we feel something, Jane, do you feel that? I mean, sometimes people might react with their emotions, but do you think sometimes when we feel something that maybe that's a truth that we're sensing?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
When we have a connection emotionally to, like, you know, I could look in the past at this deep south, and I never had lived down there before. And when I did move down there for a couple of years, it just seemed to resurrect something that was inside me. And that's when I started to figure out that I had lived in the Civil War. And at the time, I didn't think that I would lived in the south. And then being away from it for so long, you know, that was back in 85 when I moved to Upper Michigan, to the north. It's like 2 years ago, it really hit me. It's like, you lived in the South. You were in the Civil War. And so I've learned to trust those emotions.
Yes.
Those feelings, if you will.
Exactly. And it's almost like, you know, when you see in the films, you see the people who are safe crackers. And it's when that last little tumbler goes into place and the door opens And it, for me, it's that sort of feeling in my head. Suddenly, the last tumbler goes, and the door opens, and there's light, and I can see what's inside.
Mm.
And it is a very special feeling to connect with the truth, I think.
Isn't that something? It's like it's hanging there right in front of us. I'm sure it wants us to find it.
Oh, yes.
And here, somebody's torturing us, making us run around in circles, trying to piece it all together. But it's really not that hard once we start trusting and really learning how to do it, how to trust our feelings. And I think also our inner voice will guide us a long ways. We're just about out of time, Jane. I can't believe we're almost out of time here. Maybe we can talk again soon. Because you have your new book coming out, and it's been a while. Is there anything else you want to add to what we've been talking about?
Well, not really, no. All I would say is that for the people who listen to your show, and they're obviously very open-minded people, you know, do try and tune in, as you say, to your inner voice. Tune in to yourself. If you think it's going to help, then buy my book. I've got some exercises that help you do that.
Buy several of her books. Give them out as gifts. And then buy her new one when it comes out. Buy several of those.
Yes.
And if people want to find out more, they go to Jane Wareham, WHARAM.com.
Yep, absolutely. And I'm revamping my website, by the end of this week. So there'll be a lot more interesting stuff on there as well.
Well, you have a lot right now. I've been looking at it since when we came on, and there's plenty for people to look at. You even have a blog, so if people want to connect with you, that's cool. You can have an interaction with them. So.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, the blogging is a major thing that I wasn't doing the last time we spoke.
Mm.
And I do get some really interesting comments from people. And it's all to do with what we've been talking about, tuning into the emotion, not jumping onto the next person just because you don't want to be on your own, you know, how to be yourself, how to accept yourself. So the blogs are all on topics to do with emotional intelligence.
Well, Jane, it's always a pleasure talking to you, and I hope we do this again real soon. And all the best to you and your new book coming out, and maybe another one after that. So in Surrey, England, Jane Wareham, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and thanks ever so much for asking me again. And I look forward to speaking to you, before the end of the year.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.